This hour is supported by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, dedicated to redefining excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian Country.
Live from Macho Blue Earth, Robbins Kaplan Studios, Native Roots Radio.
We went to all the powwows when we were young. At that time, children could not dance. Only people over 50 years of age could dance. Most people do not know this, that the government forbid children to dance Indian. And that was so they could wipe out the culture of the young people, and then finally the new generation would never know what
happened. I'm a member of the American Indian Movement, and I'm from the indigenous nations of the Western Hemisphere.
We American Indians, we can be anything we want to be, except American Indians.
You were here long before any of us were here.
Uju, everybody. My name is Peggy Flanagan. Guabagani Gadikak and Jujuba. I'm from the White Earth Nation, and my family's the Wolf Clan.
There was trouble in Custer, South Dakota yesterday.
At the American Indian Movement is a very proud, continuing part of American Indian society. I thank you.
But what I tell you is that we are not backing down. We are here, we will stand here, because we have been here for 10,000 years. We're the home team, and we're not going anywhere.
Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Ahu, Ho-Chunk Raja, Wakunjahade, Hingadena. On today's show, we have John Greendeer, Ruth Buffalo, Winona LaDuke, Wendy Pilot, Mary Kunish Podine, and many, many more. Let's take a listen to John Greendeer.
Aho, Hanachini Kutagiwino, Mashmuskahi Gaide, Jaguhi Hekshanena, Hanainach Guida, Reske Nachechjigi, Wainup Wiwahajit. This is John Greendeer, aka Mashmuska, calling to you from a small, cute little college town called Stevens Point in central Wisconsin. Population of about 25,000, give or take. I'm not sure how populations are changing now with the recent spread of the COVID-19 virus, but certainly there are many changes, many effects that are going on. We'll get into that in a little bit. But as of now, we are just kind of home, keeping ourselves busy. It is maple season, maple syrup season. It's just closing up in central Wisconsin, so we are starting to see more days and evenings that are above freezing. In order for the maple sap to flow, you got to have nights that are below 32 degrees and above during the day, and that really creates the pressure and gets the trees to flow. But at this point now, the maple trees are producing less sugar, so in the sap itself, it comes out relatively about 2%. That means you've got to boil about 40 gallons of sap in order to get 1 gallon of syrup. So that's a lot of boiling, a lot of wood cutting. So when I first learned, I said, how do you, I'd like to learn how to make maple syrup. And someone says, do you know how to cut wood? I said, yes, then you know how to make maple syrup. So we got into that about 4 or 5 years ago, and now it is a passion and a culture within our family. We enjoy doing it. It's very relaxing, and it is actually self-isolation. So I really think that given some of the activities that we have out there, especially for the early spring foragers, they're going to find themselves right at home with the recent outbreak of COVID-19, so they'll make it through pretty much unaffected by that in some regard. There is no doubt we are in some serious, uncertain, unpredictable times that we have. Certainly, you know, heeding the warnings are things that will help suppress the spread of the virus. So social distancing is a pretty much a mandate. We have a lot of local businesses that are closed. We have the recent trending essential, non-essential. So in Wisconsin, liquor stores are listed as essential. I think that's the running joke here. You know, as long as we got liquor and coffee, maybe that's kind of something that's going to keep us going by. But all jokes aside, life as we know it has changed significantly, especially those who depend on their income. So we're awaiting federal legislation to be signed in and checks to be cut to not only just give us some immediate severance for making sure our bills are paid, but also in the event that some people, workers are displaced because they are no longer, businesses are no longer opening or open or services that are no longer provided, that we are not business as usual, as it turns out, with unemployment, which only provides a percentage of your, you know, gross income over the course of the years, but that hopefully the supplement will be able to maintain your income for at least the next 4 months. So these are something that are hopefully encouraging to get us through. But at the same token, we have a responsibility on our end of the deal to make sure social distancing and proper hygiene are a part of everyday practice. I am not a medical expert, although I work in the Department of Health for the Ho-Chunk Nation, but I have received a lot of medical advice from folks that are even more distant from the medical field. So we also have to be careful of what we're watching, what we're listening to, and for God's sake, quit sending things through Facebook Messenger. Nobody wants your links. Nobody wants your epiphanies. Nobody wants your conspiracy theories. What we're looking for, at least as consumers, is to make sure that we can pay our mortgage, our car payments, our utilities, make sure that there's food on the table, make sure that the risk or hazard mitigation is in place around the areas. So if you think you're doing the world a favor by forwarding the latest trending thing about COVID-19 through Facebook Messenger, stop. You have to do that. So I know that self-discipline in these uncertain times are hard to commit to, but we do have to make sure that we don't create more of a pandemic than it actually is. This is a virus. It is something that you learn about in your ninth grade science classes. These are elements that look for a host that can do significant amount of damage, but can only travel through certain means, whether it be airborne, whether it be droplet, whether it be contact. So most importantly is to make sure that we practice hygiene, that we wash frequently used countertops and door handles and things like that, that we steering wheels, that we make sure that we cover our mouths when we cough. These are just basic rules that we should be following anyway. I do not want to minimize the risk. This is a virus that does not have a vaccine at this point, that is indiscriminate about who it's affecting. It doesn't care about your conspiracy theories. It doesn't care about your status at work, whether you're essential or not. This is a very non-discriminating virus that that we are at risk of getting if we don't practice these safe recommendations. They are not hard to do, but and this could go away. This is completely in our field to control. However, defiance and people who have some sort of penchant to test someone's religious or traditional beliefs by hosting mass congregations, they are our actual biggest threat. So we need to make sure that, isolation and social distancing, those are a big part of everyday practice. The sooner we can grasp that, the sooner this virus can pass up and we can get back open for business. We have to remember that this is a health concern, that what is driving this is deeply rooted in health and science and not the market. So we do have a lot of folks saying, well, I need to open my business. I need to get back to work. I need to do these things. We need to get the economy flowing again. And yes, I think every person in the medical field will agree. But until this gets controlled, we have to follow the prescription. So we cannot be making market-driven decisions in order to quarter and contain the COVID-19 virus. So I'll throw that, conjecture out there. In all reality, I think we can stamp this out. We are showing, statistics are showing that social distancing is having a tremendous effect, although the number of those diagnosed and confirmed cases is going up. In Wisconsin, we have currently, as of reported today, and that could change, 784 confirmed cases with about 14 deaths. So these, unfortunately, are numbers that are growing. They are on the increase. And, I don't think those numbers are going to start going down anytime soon. So we are starting to see a trend, more and more cases being diagnosed, partly because more test kits are available, but also because, it's doing what it was meant to do. So hopefully we can reach our threshold. They, predict, and this has been a moving target, 3 weeks, and then we'll actually start to see some plateau. That is not real news. That is a scientific prediction that, you know, changes by the course of the day, by daily information. So so I want to make sure that we do. So going back to where we are as Indigenous folks and how this relates, because, you know, I have a lot of friends and family who are out there who are, you know, standing proud, you know, in the face of the spread of the virus, saying we survived smallpox and we survived yellow fever and we survived hunger and the elements, and we are resilient and we are the greatest nation of survivors that ever were. And I'm not going to disagree with that. What I have to do is bring people back to reality, that the people that have survived these major, you know, climactic events in our history, whether it be weather related or disease related, we come from them, but we are not them. They did not live in temperature controlled homes. They did not jump in the car every time they wanted ice cream. They did not sit in movie theaters. They did not have running water. They did not have the comforts of home and life and income. These are folks that lived completely off the land, that's calendars were determined by what was going on in their natural world, that became resilient to certain elements of weather and fire and frigid cold. You know, so we're not the same. So I'm proud to be a descendant of those folks, but really I'm pretty soft. You know, as much as I go out and hunt and forage and feel like I live off the land, there is no way I can put myself in the same class of people that did survive these things. So we do have to practice some of the, you know, modern ways of protection and ensuring that us, our most vulnerable, our elders and our children are safe. So don't stand up on the bodies like you're a champion, because when these epidemics hit, a great majority of the people we're talking about died. They died. Their families, their survivors, had to bury them. And so we lost a lot. And there's no way, given the information that we have retained from them, that we can really culturally survive epidemics like this. So we have to follow those rules. So I want to make sure that that's really clear, that, you know, just because we have a history of survival does not mean that, you know, we're going to get through this unscathed. From the tribal government's perspective, every tribe is going to have different types of effects. So in the Midwest, you know, whenever we think of the tribes and their government, we often think of gaming. Not all tribes are organized around gaming. Some are around minerals. Some are corporately chartered. You know, so for at least the Midwest, we are gaming tribes, and those are our main incomes to this interesting hybrid of tribal governance, which is essentially a business and a government. Instead of taxing the people to run our government, we actually use gaming to supplement what would normally be tax dollars. When the gaming facilities do close down, the main thread of nourishment financially is severed. And so there are changes that have to be made in terms of large employers like the Ho-Chunk Nation, like the Oneida. We have to look at, you know, making sure that they can be real determinants of what is essential, what is non-essential, and what the overall longitudinal economic life expectancy of a tribe without income is. So these are tough times, and they're uncertain times, because, you know, we want to believe that when this virus gets stamped out, that we're going to go back to work and it's going to be business as usual. And that is not the case. The startup is going to be, I would anticipate, more of a rebuild rather than a restart. There's going to be a lot of evaluations and prioritizations that are going to take place. And it's going to be probably some of the toughest times to be an elected official or someone in management, because, you know, people really rely on income to feed their families and to take care of them. But more importantly, they rely on healthcare. And, you know, for me, and more of an opinion, is I really feel like healthcare should be the last one standing in any nation or any corporation, that making sure that their employees or their members are covered, at least given some limited coverage to see them through an issue such as this. So it's not a bright and happy subject, but there is light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, this is something that, you know, will leave us at some point. This is something that has tested our abilities to jump into our incident command systems and develop new roles and responsibilities, to see leaders jump into places where there should have been leaders, you know, where you got a lot of folks that, you know, were finding out whether or not you actually can fulfill the things that you said you did, because this is where leaders are actually made during the toughest times, and we're seeing them. And I really feel like the most important thing now, whether it becomes from the federal, state, county, or other municipal governments, even including tribal, is communication. Making sure people know. It's not that I'm going to lose my job or not lose my job. It's that I don't know. And that's really the most important thing any leader can do, is make sure that they're communicating the best that they can with what they have. So, you know, for us, we are indigenous. We are resilient. We have taken a group in the last, you know, half a century here and propelled them into the most advanced governing and business management systems there are. And we've done so with the least amount of resources to begin with. We've done them with the highest ACE scores. So people that have, you know, come from, you know, poverty and abuse and, you know, neglect and starvation. And we have advanced these tribes into nations, to strong nations that have the ability to stand up with great fortitude. We will certainly overcome this, not without cost, but we will certainly overcome what we have in front of us. And so I am inspired by some of the innovation, the people that are coming to the table with good ideas. I really feel like this is an opportunity for us to reevaluate how we are as a nation, and making sure that from this point on, because all we have is today forward, to make sure that emergency planning and anything to do with this is on the table every single day. And that means something that we haven't done before, because if we have a dollar extra, we're going to hurry up and give that out and keep our elected seats. We can't do that anymore. We have to realize that, you know, anything could stop the machine from generating the revenue that we need to continue to operate and be the employers that we are. So we need to make sure that we prioritize in a catastrophe that we have an incident command plan and response team laid out, so that we can follow that. That provides a little surety and certainty that when we need it the most. So right now we are being tested, and we'll pass this test. It's a matter of making sure that overall, you know, it isn't just what we do as a nation or as a workforce of employees, but as we do as communities, as we do as members of the state, members of the nation, that we practice the simple things, the prescriptions that we were given, and hold to those. The sooner we do that, the sooner this becomes behind us. So I want to thank all the listeners out there for giving me just a hot moment to express my opinion. I'm proud to be who I am. I'm proud to have the skills and the little bit of knowledge that I do. I know that my family can survive if we have to be taken off the grid. We know enough to do that. If we don't know enough, we know enough people that can help. And so really that's what it's about. You know, Ke'i Neke, you're not going to do it alone. Hanachekti, Hiain Chuk Shanawi, we're all going to do this together. That is the message that we have today. So thank you very much for listening to me. This is Mashuska. Thank you very, very much again, Native Roots Radio, everybody on the team over there, for allowing me to throw some spit across the Midwest and your listening audience. So thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, John Greendeer, for all you do. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
The Neighborhood Cafe is a locally owned and operated business and proud sponsor of I'm Awake. Enjoy a great happy hour Tuesday through Saturday from 3 to 6 p.m. with specials on food and drinks. The Neighborhood Cafe serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner, all made from scratch daily. Located next to O'Gara's in St. Paul off Snelling and Selby, stop in and try one of their specialty sandwiches or delicious burgers paired with a local craft beer. More at theneighborhoodcafe.com.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Native-owned Meg Mechanical is your local heating, ventilation, and air conditioning professional. Meg has the experience needed to diagnose and repair your heating and air conditioning systems. Whether repair or complete mechanical design, we do it all. No job is too big or too small. Meg Mechanical has completed projects as large as U.S. Bank Stadium and will provide the same great service in your home. Visit magmechanical.com or call 612-655-5339. Please remember Mag Mechanical when you have HVAC needs. Mention this ad to receive 1 hour of free service.
When we go out to browse for books and grab something to eat, Moon Palace Books is where we go.
This unique bookstore is located at 3032 Minnehaha Avenue in Minneapolis, just minutes from St. Paul.
A great place to find one-of-a-kind books, cards, and great gifts.
Geek Love Cafe at Moon Palace Books has cold-pressed coffee, pizza, salads.
Local, organic, fair trade, vegan, carnivore options.
Beer and wine.
Community and performance room.
Great parking.
What are we waiting for? Let's go to
Moon Palace Books, 3032 Minnehaha Avenue, Minneapolis.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake. I'm Robert Pilot. Again, we are always excited to have Ruth Buffalo on. Ruth Buffalo is a member of the North Dakota House of Representatives, and she is the first Native American Democrat woman elected in North Dakota legislation. Thank you so much for being on, Ruth.
Yes, thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, so it's really great to talk to you, too, because I know with our Facebook Live, we have a big contingency that listen out in the Dakotas, North Dakota and South Dakota. And so I'm really happy that you're on to be able to give some insight and some information about what's happening over there to everybody, too. But so what is happening over there right now?
Well, in North Dakota today, the governor did issue an executive order asking or telling the different businesses to shut down by midnight tonight, like cosmetologists, tattoo parlors, any personal service providers to shut down for, I believe it's 2 weeks or so. But we don't have nothing in place yet for like shelter in place. I know Minnesota has recently done that as of this evening, and then Montana has, but North and South Dakota haven't yet, so it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. We can balance that a little bit, too. You had just won something here this last week.
Right, yep. So I won the election within our state party for the DNC committee woman.
Wow.
I have
applause here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. Cool. All right. I wanted to use that button, and that's.
Thank you.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, it's a 4-year term. The former DNC committee woman didn't seek re-election, and so there were myself and another lady who were competing for that seat. And so, what was interesting this year was that everything was online. So our whole state Democratic Nonpartisan League state convention was held online.
Wow.
And so good and bad, I think. But the good things about it is that more people were able to attend who probably wouldn't have otherwise been able to afford to drive to Minot, North Dakota, you know, have to purchase or, you know, lodging and meals and things. So I think having it online was made it more accessible to people who had have internet, you know, to be able to participate. So the downside was just, you know, not having that human connection or being able to see people or congregate together and things, but
right.
we still get to see people. They had a town hall for the DNC committee candidates that last Saturday evening. Oh, no, last Friday night, I believe, and mm-hmm. then voting was Saturday morning. So.
Well, that's awesome. And I don't know, is that what were the negatives? Because I think that's something that we're going to be leaning to here if we keep up with what's happening with the virus. We may be voting for the next election online or mail-in or whatever. How did it go?
Right. I would say North Dakota, our Democratic Nonpartisan League, really led in trying something different and really having it be a success. I really haven't heard of too much of the downsides, but I'm not involved in the logistic part of things or the behind the scenes things. It's an adjustment for everybody though, but mm-hmm. I guess the thing to consider too is that we did have a optional community forum held within Facebook. So we used the social media platform of Facebook, and people were able to get added into a private group for the convention and post their candidate videos and speeches in there and have some dialogue. But mm-hmm. not everybody uses Facebook too. So that was, again, trying to figure out how to reach the everybody that we wanted to.
Right. Yeah, there's going to be pluses and minuses, but hopefully we got it figured out, or we're going to have it figured out for this next next election, because I can't handle another 4 years of 45. That's just my little editorial right now. But it's just crazy. And how about Cuomo? He's kind of looking good here for president now. All of a sudden, it's crazy. But hey, you know, one of the things too that you were telling me a little bit about earlier off the air was that there was a sort of a prison break, and can you tell the audience a little bit about that?
Sure. South of us, south of Bismarck in mm-hmm. here, which is South Dakota state capital, also like Bismarck is for us, but they have a women's state prison there, and there was a large group of women who had left their work site there in a low minimum security,
mm-hmm.
considered minimum security. They're able to leave during the day and go to a work site. And my understanding, they left the work site. But it's also my understanding from family members that these group of women who left were fearful of contracting COVID-19
right.
because there was fear and concern of being exposed to a person who had tested positive with COVID-19 within the women's state prison in Pierre, South Dakota.
And I believe that. And as everybody knows, Native Americans are the percentage of being incarcerated is from all the way to teens to adults, is, and women and men are the highest in the nation.
Right. And so it's so alarming. And that's been one of the consistent constituent concerns that I receive. You know, I'm representing a district that is considered, that is off the reservation here in South Fargo, but I receive requests from across the state and region. So I'm happy to help or, you know, get people connected and help get the message shared of people needing help, you know, on certain topics. But that's been one certainly consistent one is the concern of incarcerated relatives. Even in North Dakota, our Native youth are overrepresented within our juvenile justice system.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really are thinking of how are our incarcerated relatives doing right now at this time. In conversations with other powerhouse groups in South Dakota who are advocating and working diligently on this topic issue, I was able to reach out to our state prison in North Dakota to see if I could get a tour or a visit, but I was denied because the facility is on lockdown right now due to the COVID-19 mm-hmm. safety precautions, but still plan to make regular communication with them to make sure that you know, safety guidelines are being followed during this public health crisis. We have the CDC recommendations, but also looking at the World Health Organizations too, that are specific recommendations for making sure that our incarcerated relatives are being well taken care of too, because they're human beings too, and they are, you know, our loved ones and have family members that miss them, you know, so it's they deserve to have the same respect and treatment as well.
Absolutely. They all have mothers or have had mothers in their lifetime. Hey, so how is you and your family holding up?
We're holding up pretty good. Yeah, we're staying busy and still even just doing our own self-isolation or trying to make sure that we're practicing good hygiene and, you know, not putting our fingers on our face. You know, I have, there's six of us under one roof. And so, but yeah, we're doing good. Kids are, you know, getting into some sort of schedule with their homework and schoolwork. So, yeah, we're holding up pretty good. Also want to put a plug in, too, for the 2020 census, that people can visit 2020census.gov to get more information on how you can fill that out. And it's a way to kind of make good use of this downtime that we're having, being, you know, practicing physical distancing or self-quarantine or all those different buzzwords and making sure that we're staying home, basically.
Well, absolutely. And I did ours, and, you know, there's only two of us here, and it took me literally 7 minutes to do it. Well, it'll probably take you with six, probably about 15 minutes. But no, I'm just kidding. But thank you so much for being on. And giving us a great update on your district and North and South Dakota, too. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you for having me. Happy to connect you also with the good women and folks in South Dakota to visit more in depth on the work that they're doing.
Right on. Thank you so much, Peeny Geegee. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and that was Ruth Buffalo. We'll be right back after this short break.
Jay Selby's, an airy plant-based cafe serving up American classics, nestled in the heart of St. Paul in the historic Cathedral Hill neighborhood at 169 Victoria Street, Jay Selby's serves great plant-based food and only plant-based foods, where customer service is a priority, great food a tradition, and a comfortable, cool space for like-minded people to gather and enjoy a sustainable, environmentally friendly, and compassionate meal. As the Star Tribune writes, Jay Selby's is an innovative vegan restaurant that does a spot-on Big Mac. It's a good day for good food.
If the statistics say that 1 in 3 Native women and 1 in 6 Native men have experienced sexual assault in their lifetime, it means our whole community is affected by sexual violence. 1 is too many. Don't stand by. Stand up. Don't engage in acts of sexual violence and shut down the dirty jokes, the gossip, the victim blaming and shaming. As a community, we can change the way we respond. Contact the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition to attend a workshop to learn more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition.
MN350 is a grassroots, volunteer-driven organization fighting for climate justice and a swift transition away from a fossil fuel-based economy. To get involved, visit mn350.org or find us on Facebook at MN350. Building a climate movement in Minnesota.
With your AM950 weather, I'm Sam Turnberg. Today there's a chance of storms with a high near 47. Tonight we got rain with a low around 33. Tomorrow rain and snow with a high near 49. Monday mostly sunny with a high near 55. And Tuesday partly sunny with a high near 55. With the state closing bars and restaurants for dining in, it's especially important that you support our Eat Local Minnesota restaurants. They are all locally owned, so the money you spend stays local and helps them keep their doors open. More information at eatlocalminnesota.com.
Hi, this is Governor Walz. Thank you for listening to Native Roots Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Wakunjahare, and my taxpayer name is Robert Pilot. We're always excited to have Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth here with us. Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, Winona.
I mean, Robert, nice to hear from you.
Yes, thank you so much for being on. And I know we have a lot to talk about, a lot going on across Turtle Island here. So there's some good news and there's some good news, it looks like. Can you fill our listeners in?
Well, you know, bad news and good news. I mean, so, you know, I was talking to the tribal chairman today. Maybe I was, yeah, we talked in person. Sometimes you forget if you talk in person or it's on email. And he said, you know, that they can see the stars in China.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really something to think about. Like, you know, in the crisis that is around us, there is, like, not only a silver lining, there's a blue sky.
Right. Wow.
Exactly. And I think you've got to think about that. You know, I'm up here in the woods. I'm quarantined. Our tribe, when they said that we have to stay in the shelter at home, they also said that we can continue our traditional harvesting activities. And it's the sugar bush time now, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so I was out hauling sap today, and it's you know, it was a very good day. And it reminds you that these traditional ways, pre-petroleum, pre- all that, you know, crazy chemicals, you know, these are good ways and there's good medicine in there. So I'm grateful. It is good in the crisis that swirls around.
Mm-hmm.
The woods are good.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. We're all getting out more too. And I think we're having a lot of things are changing and are going to be changed forever. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yes. Okay. Well, okay. So, you know, as you know, for 7 years, I've been, you know, working on this Enbridge problem, which mm-hmm. is the Canadian multinational corporation that wants pipeline number 7 in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this week was not a good week for oil producers in the tar sands. Suncor, the single largest producer, I believe, they didn't totally close down, but they closed down a portion of their operation because the Saudi-Russian oil fight has driven the price of oil down to $7.34 a barrel, which, of course, makes everybody wish they were driving around. But let's get real. We can't do that one. And so this crisis means the tar sands operators are closing shop, cutting, you know, that last week it was the Teck mine closed. And so I just want to point out to the Waltz administration and to, you know, the powers that be that talk about the economics of Minnesota, now is not the time to risk a whole new corridor for the tar sands industry in its twilight.
Exactly.
So bad news for them. And in spite of that, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, we wrote a letter because there was supposed to be a big hearing this week in Bemidji.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we all wrote them a letter. My tribe did. We wrote one. A lot of people wrote letters. And we said, you can't hold a public hearing in the middle of the COVID pandemic.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, the IRS even gave us a postponement. I mean, if the IRS gives you time, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency should give the people time. Well, tell you what, you know, Laura Bishop, with all due respect, she extended the deadline for submission of comments for 1 week.
Jeez.
A week.
Yeah.
And have announced 3 townhouse hearings, you know, where town hall hearings that are electronic, where you can testify for a minute and a half about why you think that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency should not issue a permit to Enbridge.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that this is very wrong, and the MPCA and the governor have some leeway. They should not subject the people to the regulatory process and ask us to participate in a video conference in the middle of this COVID pandemic. I mean, I'm too busy to write my testimony. I've been sewing masks, Robert.
Yeah.
I sewed a whole bunch of masks. I got camo. They're birch bark camo. I have corn masks.
Wow. That's crazy. I know. They've been reading 45's playbook, it sounds like, you know.
What are they doing? Week. Come on. You know, with all due respect, I've had high regard for the administration, but why should we have water quality hearings on the single largest environmental threat to northwestern Minnesota in the middle of the pandemic? Is that for Enbridge? Is that for the Army Corps?
Mm.
You know, we need to put this off.
That's
we
right.
just need to not issue a permit. The other thing I want to say is that mm-hmm. on Saturday night, we're having a Facebook event showing the film LN3.
Cool.
And you can look on the Honor the Earth Facebook. There's a special way to sign up. And there's a little update with some of us will be presenting.
Cool.
Following that, you know, so you can watch that in from the comfiness of your own home.
Right.
But so that's kind of my update. But
yeah,
it was good. It was good in the Sugar Bush today.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of sap, 4% sugar.
Hey,
sweet.
I know that I learned a lot about Standing Rock through your video posts, and there's some good news in Standing Rock, too, this last week.
Oh, yeah, I totally forgot about that one. Okay, so the court ruled that the environmental impact statement was inadequate, that the Army Corps should not have issued those permits. Now, that's a pretty big ruling. You know, I mean, I have to say that, you know, better late than never, I think I'm supposed
right.
to say.
Right.
We told you so, you know, and the subsequent leaks, these pipeline projects should not go ahead, you know, and there should be no, you know, we should be decommissioning
right.
DAPL, you know. If the system works, we decommission a project. You don't get a pass. So another good day. Thank you to Earth Justice for that
right.
win.
Yeah.
You know, thank you to all our attorneys.
Right.
May the force be with you.
Exactly.
And then, you know, I just want to wish everybody the best. And you know, everybody, this is this moment where we can take a breath. You know, we can take a breath. We mm-hmm. all got, like, you know, 80,000 jobs at one moment. We're all stressed out.
Right.
Take a breath.
Yeah.
Take a breath. Mother Earth is taking a breath. Take a breath with her. Take a breath with her.
Right on. Peenie Geegee Winona, for all you do, and thank you so much for adding so much to our show.
Amy Gwitch, thanks for letting me come on, Robert. You well, take care down there, and everybody get in the sugar bush because it's full of sweetness.
Right on. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and that was Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth. We'll be right back.
Robbins Kaplan, LLP, protects and defends American Indian tribes because for too long they have faced a competitive disadvantage when litigating against powerful forces. With its American Indian law and policy practice, Robbins Kaplan, LLP, seeks to redefine excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country. Founded and led by former United States attorneys Brendan Johnson and Tim Purden, their American Indian law and policy practice exists to bring justice to tribal clients whose claims in the past have been dismissed or ignored due to their underdog status. Their American Indian law lawyers understand the challenges tribes face when state and local government infringe on tribal sovereignty and the federal government neglects its trust responsibilities. Their passion for tribal sovereignty and self-determination is the driving force behind their practice, fueling their tribal advice and advocacy, especially when tribes are forced to litigate against powerful interests. Robbins Kaplan, LLP, representing American Indian tribes, tribal government boards and commissions, individual tribal members, and American Indian business and business concerns. For more information, visit robbinskaplan.com.
We are your relatives.
We are your relations.
Brothers.
Sisters.
Sons.
Daughters.
And some of us are your grandchildren.
We are your community. Historically, we held places of honor and respect. Because of the impact of colonization, some of us are rejected, thrown out from family, friends, and community, set up as targets for sexual violence, sex trafficked, humiliated, tortured, and murdered. Everybody has the right to be safe. We are your relatives. Remember,
homophobia is not traditional.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
This is Julian Gostro, and I listen to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Wakunjahade. Hey, we're always looking forward to this update from Nancy Bolio of 350, MN350, Bemidji. Thank you so much for being on this week on Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, Nancy.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be on your show. So again, thanks for this opportunity to share what's going on here in Indian country up north. And I just wanted to give a big shout out to all of our relatives across this nation, across the seas, for standing In solidarity in Standing Rock, we had some good news this week that Army Corps violated some environmental laws. And so a full environmental study does have to take place. So what that reminds us is that when we stand together in solidarity, we have people power. So that was great victory. And that reminds me of the victory that we could have with Line 3 if we all come together and remind ourselves that we have until April 10th to make a comment. And on our page, Rise Coalition on Facebook, there is a link to the three different ways you can comment. And so we encourage people to show up in the town hall meeting. There's also, you can record yourself and share that with the PC, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and then you can also do the online comment. But I encourage people to do the video and or the town hall because those are more personal than the written. But whatever works for you is just fine. And so we have until April 10th to make sure we get those in. And then I also wanted to reflect a little bit on the COVID-19 and the current stay-at-home order from the governor's office. So starting last night, we were ordered to stay home for 2 weeks, and what we do know to probably be longer than that. So I'm just letting people know that I think we need to start thinking about preparing ourselves for the long haul and what does it take to be safe. And one of those things that we really, really need to emphasize is staying at home. And it's hard, but when we don't do that, we put our elders at risk. And we have to remind ourselves that all lives matter, from the elders to our vulnerably, the ones with medical, conditions, pre-existing conditions, we put them at risk. We put our pregnant women, and we cannot, you know, I don't mean to say this in a bad way, but we can't flirt with death because all lives matter. So, yeah, our elders, we have to remind ourselves they're our knowledge, they're our storytellers in our culture. They are also our moms and our dads, our aunts and our uncles and our siblings, our cousins, our relatives and our neighbors. And so the coronavirus not only threatens Indian country just in dollars, but it also threatens our history and our legacy and our family. So we want to make sure that we stay at home and stay safe, because another thing we do know is that the Indian Health Service across the nation is not ready for this. There's only like 13 isolation units, 52. There's just not a whole lot of equipment. I don't know. I can't remember offhand what it was, but it was 28 ventilators, 52 isolation rooms, and dwindling personal protective equipment. So Deb Haaland and a couple other folks in Congress fought for $20 million because the government only wanted to give us $3 billion, and they asked for $20 billion, and we only ended up with $10 billion in a relief aid package during this time. So, again, we know the government has never took care of us, and we see this again right now. So because we lack the funding and the resources available to take care of our people that might get sick with COVID-19, we're going to be overwhelmed. And some of our people don't even have health care to be able to go access health care somewhere else. So it's in our best position right now just to stay home and take care of everybody, take care of ourselves, and know that this is a serious matter at hand. So I encourage all of our listeners today to heed those instructions and take care of your family, because I want to see my mom here. My mom's an elder, and she has health risk. And when somebody in my community goes out and thinks that this is not dangerous, well, it is, and they come back and they put our communities at in danger, not just our families, but our communities as a whole. And so what we're doing during this time is trying to find a way that we can help with mutual aid. So currently one of my projects I'm working on is creating neighborhood pods. And so starting next week, we'll have a way that we can teach people how to help each other. We have great resources out there coming together and helping us, but there's always those little tiny needs that aren't always being met. And as a people, we want to teach each other how to help each other and build on community, because after COVID-19 is said and done, we still have to be community, be strong, because there's always a circumstance in life that challenges us. And as a community, if we learn to stand together and be whole, we're stronger and we're more healthier. And so I encourage people during this time, stay home, use the traditional medicines. in a respectful way, give your offerings, make sure you're using it right, because some of our medicines can be toxic to the human body, so make sure you know your usage on your medications, and remember that food is medicine, so a lot of fruits and vegetables right now, boiled eggs, you know, things that build on your zinc and your vitamin C if you have a low immune system is critical right now. Mm-hmm. Honey works great. I want to say if there's allergy sufferers out there, I'm in about 2 weeks of feeling way much better since I started the raw honey in my cedar tea. And I feel that I could breathe a lot better now. And that was one thing as an allergy patient. I was worried about COVID-19 on my congested airways, so I had to deal with that underlying health issue before the threat might have found its way to me. And I encourage all allergy people, find some raw honey. I do 2 teaspoons in my tea a day, 1 per cup, morning mm-hmm. and night. And, Robert, I feel great. Wow. And that reminds me that nature gives us gifts. And let's go back to where we came from. So COVID-19 is kind of like a wake-up call.
Right. All the elders, all
the way we live.
Right. All the elders have talked about these days coming where we have to know how to plant and know our medicines and be able to light a fire. And I know you're ahead of the curve, and you've always been advocating that. Nancy, thank you so much for your information.
All right. Well, you take care, stay safe, and stay in. And a shout-out to everyone out there. Stay home, be safe, because you matter too.
That's right. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Stay tuned for Hour 2. We have Wendy Pilot, Mary Kunish-Podine, Barry Hand, and a rebroadcast of Emma Needham. We'll be right back after this short break.
Robbins Kaplan, LLP, protects and defends American Indian tribes because for too long they have faced a competitive disadvantage when litigating against powerful forces. With its American Indian law and policy practice, Robbins Kaplan, LLP, seeks to redefine excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country. Founded and led by former United States attorneys Brendan Johnson and Tim Purden, their American Indian law and policy practice exists to bring justice to tribal clients whose claims in the past have been dismissed or ignored due to their underdog status. Their American Indian law lawyers understand the challenges tribes face when state and local government infringe on tribal sovereignty and the federal government neglects its trust responsibilities. Their passion for tribal sovereignty and self-determination is the driving force behind their practice, fueling their tribal advice and advocacy, especially when tribes are forced to litigate against powerful interests. Robbins Kaplan, LLP, representing American Indian tribes, tribal government boards and commissions, individual tribal members, and American Indian business and business concerns. For more information, visit robbinskaplan.com.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
My name is Jackie, and I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to the AM 950 KTNF St. Louis Park, Minneapolis, St. Paul, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Special report, coronavirus update. In Norfolk, Virginia, this past hour, President Trump traveled to a naval shipyard to see off the USNS Comfort, a 1,000-bed Navy hospital ship bound for New York City to relieve overcrowded hospitals.
By treating non-infected patients remotely on the ship, it will help to halt very strongly the transmission of the virus.
Earlier, the president said he may put what he calls a quarantine travel restrictions on New York because he says travelers are bringing coronavirus to Florida and they don't want that. New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo says that's a concern.
I don't know how that could be legally enforceable. And from a medical point of view, I don't know what you would be accomplishing.
The president says any quarantine wouldn't affect trade. The death toll in all of the U.S. has now topped 1,800. I'm Jan Johnson. In Great Britain, where the number of coronavirus deaths now tops 1,000, a top health official says his country will have done well if the deaths are kept under 20,000. Prime Minister Boris Johnson is among those testing positive, as Nick Robertson reports.
The Prime Minister, now in his second day of self-isolation, he tweeted, we can get through this, we can get through, we can do this, we can do it together, which has been his mantra since the beginning. But his health secretary is also in isolation because he also has tested positive for the virus. The chief medical officer in England has the symptoms as well, the fever, the cough. He is self-isolating.
On a sunny spring day in California, officials are pleading with people not to crowd the beaches or hiking trails. Governor Gavin Newsom has already ordered 40 million residents to stay home. In other parts of the country, another threat today, more than 70 million of us under the threat of some kind of severe storm. I'm Jan Johnson.
If you're one of the millions of Americans who owes back taxes, if you get nervous when the mail comes because you might get a letter from the IRS, then you've heard. Their enforcement agents are cracking down this year and can garnish your paycheck, levy your bank accounts. Even your home or business could be at risk over unpaid taxes. It's all true, but it's also true there's a way out. It's called the Fresh Start Initiative, an important government program for tax debt assistance. The award-winning experts at Optima Tax Relief will fight to get you the best deal possible, protecting your paycheck and your assets from IRS collections. But don't delay, because the IRS is tacking on interest and hefty penalties every single day. So don't wait until it's too late. Call Optima now for a free consultation.
Call 800-348-0269. 800-348-0269. 800-348-0269.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
I'm attorney Rachel Schroman of Schroman Law, and I've got you covered. I provide trusted legal advice in wills and trusts, supplemental and special needs trusts, powers of attorney, health care directives, probate, financing long-term care, medical assistance planning, and prenuptial and postnuptial agreements. These are areas of law that are intensely personal in nature, and I don't take the responsibility of providing counsel around such issues lightly. Learn more at schromanlaw.com. That's schromenlaw.com.
Hi, this is Chad from AM950. I've been telling you about Snap Construction, the company AM950 trusts for all roofing and siding needs. Now that spring is here and summer is around the corner, now is a great time to find out why AM950 trusts Snap Construction. Ryan, the owner, and his team at Snap Construction have been great to work with, and they have enjoyed working with our listeners.
Hi, this is Ryan, owner of Snap Construction. We've absolutely loved working with the listeners at AM950. What a great group of people and a great radio station. I personally want to thank all the listeners that we've had the opportunity to work with. At Snap Construction, we look forward to working with many more of you when it comes to your roofing, siding, windows, and insulation. Don't just take Chad's word for it. Google Snap Construction, arguably the most well-reviewed roofing, siding, window, and insulation contractor in the Twin Cities Metro. We led this community with a lifetime craftsmanship warranty. Don't wait to get a free estimate. Call today, 612-333-SNAP, 612-333-SNAP, or visit us online, snapconstruction.com.
Robbins Kaplan, LLP, protects and defends American Indian tribes because for too long they have faced a competitive disadvantage when litigating against powerful forces. With its American Indian law and policy practice, Robbins Kaplan, LLP, seeks to redefine excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country. Founded and led by former United States attorneys Brendan Johnson and Tim Purden, their American Indian law and policy practice exists to bring justice to tribal clients whose claims in the past have been dismissed or ignored due due to their underdog status. Their American Indian law lawyers understand the challenges tribes face when state and local government infringe on tribal sovereignty and the federal government neglects its trust responsibilities. Their passion for tribal sovereignty and self-determination is the driving force behind their practice, fueling their tribal advice and advocacy, especially when tribes are forced to litigate against powerful interests. Robbins Kaplan LLP, representing American Indian tribes, tribal government boards and commissions, individual tribal members, and American Indian business and business concerns. For more information, visit robbinskaplan.com.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Sam Turnberg. Today there's a chance of storms with a high near 47. Tonight we got rain with a low around 33. Tomorrow rain and snow with a high near 49. Monday mostly sunny with a high near 55. And Tuesday partly sunny with a high near 55. With the state closing bars and restaurants for dining in, it's especially important that you support our Eat Local Minnesota restaurants. They are all locally owned, so the money you spend stays local and helps them keep their doors open. More information at eatlocalminnesota.com.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome back. The Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and this is Hour 2. This show is dedicated to those who give back and fight back for our people. We are the resistance. We are awake. All things are our relatives. What we do to everything, we do to ourselves. All is one. Black Elk. Hey, I want to introduce Wendy Pilot, who is my beautiful and awesome wife. Wendy has been an animal advocate for many years. She's a volunteer Minnesota State Council member for the Humane Society of the United States, and she works on animal issues at the state level. Tell us your name, Wendy, and tell us where you've been working lately.
Hi, everybody. My name is Hanajihi Hani, and I just started working at home. It's been a different type of experience. I'm kind of liking it. I'm working as hard as I did, if not more, from work.
I never see you. The dogs are wondering what the heck's going on.
I know. Well, you're in your office working, and I'm in my office working, and then we meet for lunch. So that's kind of cool. But I really like it because I have the two dog beds in my office. And
you don't have to sleep in those.
The dogs.
Oh.
Shut up. And the dogs stay with me all day. So that's kind of nice. I like having them around. And I think that they like being there in the office with me all day. I really do. But, you know, when this coronavirus first started, nobody knew how it was being transmitted. And a lot of people thought that their pets could carry it and give it to them.
And not be sick.
Well, a lot of people surrendered their animals, thinking that their pet could be carrying the virus. And so I was kind of thinking about that today, and I was kind of curious and thinking about, are the shelters full right now or are they empty? And if I could even find that information. But I found a really good article that was just updated 3 hours ago. It's from USA Today. And there's happy news. Pet adoptions are way up amid the coronavirus crisis, even with shelters closed to the public. So then I was wondering, well, then how does that work? If the shelters are closed, how are people getting their animals? But before I talk about that, I just wanted to talk about a lot more people are fostering right now, right? Wow. So they're home. And they have extra time, and they're fostering dogs.
You know, some people are used to having dogs and pets, and if they haven't had one or if, like, our neighbors passed away, it's they really realize how lonely it is when they're at home all the time because they're missing their dog that's usually sitting on their lap or...
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So there's lots of people out there who are fostering animals, dogs and cats, and I think that's a great thing to do. But this article that I was talking about, so even though the shelters are closed, Some shelters are people pull up in front of the shelter and you call the person who's ahead of the shelter and they'll meet you and they do like a curbside animal pickup to foster. Or you could go online and look at the dog or cat that you're interested in and go to the shelter, and then somebody will meet you there and do like a curbside meet and greet kind of thing. And
we almost got some food that way today.
Exactly. I know, right? So everybody's doing the curbside pickup. So when we went on our walk today, we saw that one of the restaurants were doing it, and even that wine place on St. Clair or Randolph, they were doing a curbside pickup too. But they're doing a curbside pickup now for the dogs and cats. So I'm really happy about it. And the funny thing is, Robert, this USA Today article has a picture of a girl and her dog playing on the beach, and I read the little caption, and it's from Long Beach, New York.
Oh,
yeah.
We know
so
where that is.
I know. I walk on the boardwalk all the time when I'm out there. My family lives in like Oceanside and Rockville Center, and Long Beach is like 2 miles away. But anyway, it's a cute picture. So I was really happy to hear about that. And, you know, last time when I was talking, I was reading an article that talked about all the wonderful things that were happening since the coronavirus. So, like, there were swans swimming in the fountains of Italy, and there were wild boars and their babies walking through the streets, and all these dolphins in Venice in the waterways, and all these things. It turns out that none of that was true, but I think that there are some good things for animals that are happening since the coronavirus, and I think even just our pets at home are having a good time. I mean, our dogs, I don't think they've ever walked this much in their lives.
Well, and things are switching and changing in ways. Some things may never go back. You may be working out of the home most time, half the time, because brick and mortar costs a lot of money.
Yeah, we don't know. I found this wonderful article, and it's from Thailand. And the coronavirus is even hurting Thailand. And there was this camp there that people would go to visit, and the people would ride these elephants. And these elephants had these heavy wooden chairs, you know, strapped to their backs. And this is what they did year after year, day after day after day. Mm-hmm. And since the tourism is so low now, and plus the government there doesn't want them to be open either because of distancing, this place decided that they're going to free the elephants.
Wow.
So they took all the chairs off the elephants. And what they're going to do instead is, I mean, they can't let the elephants just go free, because these are animals that wouldn't really know how to survive on their own, right?
Right.
But they're keeping the elephants and they're letting the animals go free. And what they want to do is just change their business model, right? They're going to change the business model, and they want people to come and see the elephants and watch the elephants and learn about the elephants and not really have to force the elephants to entertain them. So I think that's a really wonderful model, and you know, times are changing, right? So maybe the coronavirus will kind of just, you know, wake people up to things that they didn't realize before.
Right.
So I'm really happy to hear about these elephants. In fact, these elephants have been doing this for 44 years in this particular business since 1976.
What?
Yeah. Some of those elephants, that's all they did for 44 years. That's how old they are. So, you know, if you go traveling ever again, we try to encourage no going to see the dolphins, don't have birds on your shoulders, don't take pictures with the lions, right? You see those pictures, the animals are drugged, and it's really a horrible way for them to live.
Well, it's what you support. We talk about pipelines. If you're supporting pipelines, if you're supporting animal poachers and buying ivory and all those things,
fur.
Thank you. you know, that's things are changing, and Mother Earth is speaking up, and it looks like she's pissed.
Yeah.
You know,
it does. It really does look like she's pissed. This is it. She's had it.
Well, one thing I wanted to talk to you a little bit about was just, you know, I did run into a couple neighbors, and, you know, there's curbside adoption right now. And I think we should really, you know, talk about that, or curbside to get an animal to your house. They got a guinea pig. I don't know. What is your suggestion?
They got a hamster. Our neighbors got a hamster. Yeah.
What's your suggestion on what people do? Maybe they're listening to this and going, man, I'm home alone. Yeah. I need a pet.
Yep. I think that you should go on to petfinder.com. It's a wonderful website, and you could, you know, plug in, like, I want a dog less than 15 pounds, a female, and you could put your criteria in there, and then the site finds a shelter that will have that type of dog for you, and you could contact them and see how they are allowing you to, you know, pick it up or they deliver it, or, you know, they all have different ways to do it. But I'm
so
glad
we encourage
that. Absolutely.
We encourage that. And especially if you're home alone, or you're not getting along with your husband or wife, you know, and you need that little buffer in between them and bed and things like that. So,
oh my God.
No. And, you know, it's stuff like that. I really appreciate it. We only got a minute left here or so, but I saw an article on Facebook, and again, we don't know if it's true or not, but California's air is just cleaning out.
Yeah, I saw that.
So that's got to help the animals too, and the people breathing.
Yeah, Los Angeles. Yeah, the skyline there was pretty clear. So I'm sure it's true. There's less cars on the roads. So,
yeah, we know that. They said there's only 40% of the cars, and now in Minnesota and St. Paul and the Twin Cities here, the governor's has us change it now to, you know, you can't go out unless it's important things.
Yeah.
You know, basically, and there's a list of important things.
Yeah, and it's going to just be for a little while longer. It's not going to be forever. So, a
couple weeks.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. It's working so far.
In the Twin Cities, but, you know, this is a whole nother story, but, you know, people like Mississippi, the governor is saying go out and do your thing, and the mayors are trying to stop it. It's just a mess. Mm-hmm. But thank goodness we have Governor Walz here in Minnesota, who's been a really good leader. Mm-hmm. And we see, like, Cuomo's been a really good leader in New York, where you're from. And people want him to run for president now.
You never know.
That's right. Hey, thank you so much, Wendy, for your segment each week and what you do for animals, and get the word out there. I know people really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Robert.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and we'll be back after this short break.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
The Neighborhood Cafe is a locally owned and operated business and proud sponsor of I'm Awake. Enjoy a great happy hour Tuesday through Saturday from 3 to 6 p.m. with specials on food and drinks. The Neighborhood Cafe serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner, all made from scratch daily. Located next to O'Gara's in St. Paul off Snelling and Selby, stop in and try one of their specialty sandwiches or delicious burgers paired with a local craft beer. More at theneighborhoodcafe.com.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Native-owned Meg Mechanical is your local heating, ventilation, and air conditioning professional. Meg has the experience needed to diagnose and repair your heating and air conditioning systems. Whether repair or complete mechanical design, we do it all. No job is too big or too small. Meg Mechanical has completed projects as large as U.S. Bank Stadium and will provide the same great service in your home. Visit magmechanical.com or call 612-655-5339. Please remember Meg Mechanical when you have HVAC needs. Mention this ad to receive 1 hour free service.
When we go out to browse for books and grab something to eat, Moon Palace Books is where we go.
This unique bookstore is located at 3032 Minnehaha Avenue in Minneapolis, just minutes from St. Paul.
A great place to find one-of-a-kind books, cards, and great gifts.
Geek Love Cafe at Moon Palace Books has cold-pressed coffee, pizza, salads.
Local, organic, fair trade, vegan, carnivore options.
Beer and wine.
Community and performance room.
Great parking.
What are we waiting for? Let's go to
Moon Palace Books, 3032 Minnehaha Avenue, Minneapolis.
Hi, I'm Jane Sanders, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Hi, Mekakiyapi. This is State Representative Mary Kunish Podine. I'm also a candidate for Senate in District 41. It's a beautiful day, March 27th. The sky is blue. The trees are starting to bud. I noticed some of the bulbs are starting to pop up through the ground. And so there's much to be thankful for in this time of a viral pandemic. I want to share with you some of the things that have been going on at the legislative level. Yesterday, we legislators went into the Capitol. We're very careful to follow the guidelines of staying 6 feet apart. We entered the Capitol in different time periods, so we didn't have too many conglomerating at the same time. And I have to say the staff were really good about putting together a safe way for us to meet and pass some really important legislation. So yesterday we met to pass legislation that was to enable swift and responsible government action. And the bill that we passed is a $2 million appropriation from the general fund to the newly created COVID-19 fund that's in our state treasury. And that fund will be managed by MMB and will be available for state agencies to respond to the coronavirus. And there are many, many things included in there. But one thing that's most important is that the bill appropriates $11 million for the 11 tribal nations in the state. And those proceeds are to help the tribal nations mitigate the health and economic impact of COVID-19. Because with the closing of the casinos, we know that our Indian communities are really going to be struggling because those funds provide so many of the resources that our Indian communities really depend on. And so those applications for the grant funding have to be submitted to the Department of Revenue by April 1st, 2020. And if any of the tribal nations do not submit an application, the amounts that remain will be split among the other tribal nations. So if you are a tribal leader in Minnesota or you know somebody, you might want to remind them to get going. There's not a lot of time left to do those sort of things. And then nationally, the CARES Act was passed by the Senate just this past Wednesday, and it provides legislation as well and funding for those that are in need during the pandemic. CARES Act is the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, and it is the latest round of federal relief packages to address the COVID-19 pandemic. Specifically, in Title II of that legislation, under Assistance for American Workers, Families, and Businesses, it creates certain unemployment support for state unemployment programs and those who are applying for benefits and major unemployment support. And what it does is it provides direct stimulus check to us, to individuals and households, regardless of the unemployment or employment status. And it's interesting because I think they are using the addresses from our tax refunds in the past. So if you automatically had your refund, or if you automatically paid your taxes last year, the government still has that information for your bank, and so it would be automatically deposited into your bank account. If you used a mail system to do that, you should receive your check through mail. Now, some folks have moved. Some people have changed their bank account. I'm not exactly sure how that's going to work. But I do know that those stimulus checks will be about $1,200 for individuals earning up to $75,000 per year. And then it'll phase out after the $99,000 annual income. And then let me get down here. So married couples will receive $2,400 for incomes under $150,000 a year, and those checks will phase out after $198,000. Also, married couples will also receive an additional $500 for each child, and that will be phased out by income as well. There is a stimulus payment calculator on the Washington Post website, so you might want to Google Washington Post stimulus payment calculator to see how much you might get. But there's also some assistance for self-employed workers and independent contractors in that federal bill. And the program will provide payment to those not traditionally eligible for unemployment benefits, and that will include folks who are self-employed, independent contractors, those who have limited work history, as well as those who are unable to work as a direct result of the coronavirus public health emergency. And so that is really important, as we have many folks that are independent contractors or small business owners that haven't been able to keep up with all the necessities during this viral outbreak. Specifically in the federal level, there is some funding that's going to go towards Indian tribes. So the bill provides temporary funds to reimburse nonprofits, government agencies, and Indian tribes for half of the costs that they incur through December 31st, 2020, to pay unemployment benefits. And then the government also, this temporary pandemic unemployment assistance, is planning to add $600 per week to state-level unemployment insurance benefits. And they also eliminated the waiting period, so that you don't have to wait the 1 week waiting period through this year. So through December 31st, they waived that, and then they also extended the UI unemployment insurance benefits to 13 weeks. So there's more of that to come. The other thing that you should also remember is that tonight, I believe at 12 midnight, starts our stay at home for 2 weeks. There's a stay in place order, stay at home order, and it begins at 11:59 tonight, and it lasts until 5 p.m. on Friday, April 10th. And this is the first step in a three-part effort that the governor, and this is from our governor, not from the federal government, to limit the spread of COVID-19. And it also is to allow hospitals to get the materials and resources, like the ventilators, that they need to fight the disease. And once that order expires, it doesn't mean that dining rooms at bars and restaurants are going to be open. They have been mandated to close until May 1st, and we're just trying to do the best we can to prevent the spread of it. And so I've been getting a lot of questions about what is an essential business and who do those things affect. Our Governor Walz's order closed offices for a huge swath of Minnesotans. And many of those workers deemed essential have been asked to stay on their job and continue to provide some of the really urgent the urgencies that we need. And so broadly, those that will be asked to report to their jobs are like our healthcare workers, law enforcement and first responders, those at emergency shelters and child care facilities. we're asking the grocery stores, our takeout restaurants, farmers and other ag workers to continue working. We'd like to see our news organizations continue. Of course, power, gas, and water services are absolutely necessary. Excuse me. Manufacturing, transportation and logistics, construction, all of those things. If you're not sure which businesses should be staying open for business, you can go to the Minnesota government's deed website, and that's mn.gov/deed/assets/NAICS-critical-list, or just Google Minnesota government deed and you'll be able to find it. And then the governor's package also includes some of the bipartisan COVID-19 proposals. This was another thing that he worked on with our state legislators, because the legislators are the ones that allocate funds and they create the policy for the government. So the governor, the Senate, the House cannot work independently of each other. We all have to work together to make sure these things pass and get to our communities. So in a nutshell, the legislation that we've passed creates a Minnesota COVID-19 emergency fund to keep our state operating. It helps our businesses across the state secure private funding. It awards grants to licensed family center child care providers who are caring for the children of our health care and other emergency workers. It ensures continued funding for our food system. And then it also provides much needed help to local governments, tribal governments, nonprofit partners to protect people that are experiencing homelessness and food issues and mental health issues. It's really hard to, really come up with a cohesive, one-size-fits-all piece of legislation for our communities. But we at the legislature are working nonstop from home, trying to put together the best package that we can, and we will continue to do that. So stay in touch with your legislators. Ask them the good questions. Let them know what's really affecting your community. And just know that there are a lot of folks out there working hard for all of us. So say your prayers for us. Say your prayers for your family and your loved ones. And let's get through this together. In the meantime, have a really beautiful weekend. And I will be back before you know it. Wopalatanka Chimigwich.
Kinigigi, Mary Kunish Podine, for all your beautiful words. We'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake.
We are a Lusa Nation.
Jay Selby's, an airy plant-based cafe serving up American classics, nestled in the heart of St. Paul in the historic Cathedral Hill neighborhood at 169 Victoria Street. Jay Selby's serves great plant-based food and only plant-based foods, where customer service is a priority, great food a tradition, and a comfortable, cool space for like-minded people to gather and enjoy a sustainable, environmentally friendly, and compassionate meal. As the Star Tribune writes, Jay Selby's is an innovative vegan restaurant that does a spot-on Big Mac. It's a good day for good food.
I heard sex trafficking happens a lot in Indian country. What is that?
Here are some of the real reasons why sex trafficking happens in Indian country. Unequal gender roles that were forced on us by colonization. Communities don't have enough resources. Silence around domestic and sexual violence. Lack of attention and justice for missing and murdered indigenous people. There's a lot of behavior that keeps our communities out of balance. These are just a few true reasons why Native communities are targeted by traffickers. When these acts of violence happen in our communities, it opens us all up for exploitation.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
MN350 is a grassroots, volunteer-driven organization fighting for climate justice and a swift transition away from a fossil fuel-based economy. To get involved, visit mn350.org or find us on Facebook at MN350. Building a climate movement in Minnesota.
With your AM950 weather, I'm Sam Turnberg. Today there's a chance of storms with a high near 47. Tonight we got rain with a low around 33. Tomorrow rain and snow with a high near 49. Monday mostly sunny with a high near 55. And Tuesday partly sunny with a high near 55. With the state closing bars and restaurants for dining in, it's especially important that you support our Eat Local Minnesota restaurants. They are all locally owned, so the money you spend stays local and helps them keep their doors open. More information at eatlocalminnesota.com.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Wakunjahade. Hey, I'm really excited to have this guest on. He has been on a long time, and one of the exciting things about Barry Hand is that he helped Hennepin County Sheriff Dave Hutchinson get elected. And when you connect the dots, it's an amazing thing. Welcome, Barry, back to Native Roots Radio.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, I know I've been watching you on Facebook and watching your family and what they're doing. And one of the things I'd like to ask you about is what has your family been doing since the virus and the quarantine part? And also, I know you've been doing a lot of traditional medicines. Can you let our audience know how you guys have been surviving this?
Yeah, I can. You know, it's funny. This day, these things that are going on right now, I was told this, and I know others were told this years ago in the 70s, we were told this in the 80s. My dad, who passed away in the end of September, and we buried him in October, used to talk about this day coming. And other people, respected leaders in our community, men like Martin Heiber, Robert Speed, Elmer Running, you know, traditional healers, that they talked about a day was coming that just like this, and we would need our traditions, and our traditions would help us get through this. Our traditions would be the only way that we'd survive. And so now you look at, and people would ask, and I remember being a kid and then a teenager and then a young adult when some of these guys were still alive, and I would hear people asking, well, what do you mean by that? They said, you're going to have to know how to get food. You're going to have to know how to take care of your day-to-day life. You're going to have to know how to pray. You're going to have to know how to make medicine. You're going to have to know how to make a fire. You're going to have to know how to find water, make clothes, all these things. They talked about this way, way, way back. And I'm guilty of it myself. I mean, you hear it so often that you kind of don't take it seriously. You think, oh, okay, there's Dad. He's talking about how things are going to change, and everybody who's not prepared is going to have a real hard time, and a lot of people are going to die. And it kind of sounds apocalyptic, et cetera, but it's a change. It's a change. And all of these men and would say things like, our mother earth is going to be letting us know that we have a limited amount of time here if we continue with this greedy path. And, you know, we take advantage of her. We injure her daily. You could be the most left wing liberal person there is, but your clothes are still made out of petroleum. You know, your car is running on petroleum. Mm-hmm. So I'm not casting stones, but but there definitely is what we've all been a part of this. And so what's happening? Well, we have a global pandemic that was spread around because of greed, because of capitalism, because of money comes first, and now it's hitting us. And it's really not that bad. We still have electricity. Mm-hmm. We still can flush our toilets. We still, you know, have our homes to live in. But it has changed our habits, and we're used to having a habit now where we can do whatever we want, whenever we want, however we want, all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's a form of, you know, gluttony. That's a form of excess. Now, when we go to the grocery store, which we're lucky to still have, we have to decide what we really need versus what we really want. Mm-hmm. We have to think about these things. You know, am I going to buy something that's full of, you know, things that are going to, you know, spoil right away? Or am I going to get a couple sacks of potatoes that I know are going to last for a month and a half, 2 months? And so all these things, these old timers would talk about. Mm-hmm. And it's here. And if you look at, now I know there's a lot of these so-called holy men out there, all kinds of holy men nowadays. But if you look at the ones that have the backing of their families and their communities, which means they stay home and they take care of their home communities, and those ones are saying also the exact same thing that those older people would say, is you need to get back to your tradition. This is a time for reflection. Mm-hmm. Every American Indian person shouldn't be looking at staying at home for as a burden. This is a time you can work on your things. You can make things. You can work on speaking your language. You can turn off the TV and listen to the birds again. You can hear birds again. You know, you look outside. I live in the Twin Cities, in the east side of St. Paul, and there isn't a haze every morning because of car traffic. You look at the news, they'll say that the Earth's air is cleaner. Rivers are getting clearer. And that's because that's showing us we are the problem. Two-legged people, we are the problem. We have created this mess. And so if you look at who we are as American Indian people, in our traditions, whichever nation you come from, we have a teaching and laws that were given to us by the Creator. This is the time to look at the laws that your people were given and to really reflect and ask yourself, is this who I am? And if this is who I am, I better start learning about how to do things, because it's those things that are going to keep me and my family okay. So if you start talking about traditional medicine, every region, every area had medicines there to fit the same needs. So you're not going to find the same medicine in the same place. North America is a huge continent. Up in this area, you know, a lot of us are using flat cedar. We boil flat cedar and bitterroot. It grows around here. Further west in the mountains, you have another root called bear root, osha root. You know, we use that. We use a lot of things. Some people might say, well, we shouldn't be talking about these traditional medicines, protocols, and so on and so forth. Yeah, that's true. Then you need to get off Facebook. You need to get off and do those things, because you're breaking protocol every day by putting all that stuff out on Facebook. So, you know, we have an ability to doctor ourselves with the plants that are in our area. So if I'm in the Midwest, in the West, we have these things. We have pine needle tea. We have all kinds of stuff right now that we can go harvest and we can drink. You know, you get further north, they have other things. Further south, they have other things. And this is when you talk to your elders. Now we see that I've heard the president and leaderships of Wells Fargo and other CEOs or former CEOs say, sacrifice your life, we're going to lose some of these elders for the sake of the economy. So even in their own dogma of a Western American culture, of the settler culture, they say, you know, God, family, country. Now they're saying the economy, money is more important than all those things. You know, those elders that they're talking about putting at risk, they're not afraid to die. Those elders, they're brave people. But whether those elders are American Indian elders or white elders or black elders or Asian elders, that's our library. And these people are saying, throw your library away, burn your books, burn them up, to hell with them. And there's a reason for that. Because those are the ones, the wisdom keepers in our communities, that help guide us when we have questions. And if they're not there, who are we going to run to? We're going to run to the machine in our pocket that tells us how to live our life every single day, rather than talk to grandma or grandpa, auntie or uncle, because we've forgotten who we are. Coronavirus is a terrible thing. It also now has forced us, gee, I should have went and visited grandma more when I had the chance. I should have went and visited grandfather more when I had the chance. Now I can't. They might not make it. This is a time for you to reflect, and after we get through this, because we will, change your ways, change who we are, because if we don't, when the next thing comes, it's going to be worse.
Yeah.
And why do I say that? Because that's what the old people said. They said you have to know how to make a fire. You have to know how to make a shelter. They didn't say you have to know how to get electricity from the sun to charge your phone. They never said that. They never said that. What they said was that you need to know how to make medicine. And they said through all of those teachings, the most important part of that that ties it all together is prayer.
Mm-hmm.
So that belief in the Creator, and however the laws were given to your people, that is what you're supposed to do, because that is the covenant you have with the Creator, the creation. And it's time to either get back to that, because that is what's going to keep your people alive.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Barry, so much for speaking your truth. And I needed to hear that. And it's a beautiful thing. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and that was Barry Hand. We'll be right back after this short break.
Robbins Kaplan, LLP, protects and defends American Indian tribes because for too long they have faced a competitive disadvantage when litigating against powerful forces. With its American Indian law and policy practice, Robbins Kaplan, LLP, seeks to redefine excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country. Founded and led by former United States attorneys Brendan Johnson and Tim Purden, their American Indian law and policy practice exists to bring justice to tribal clients whose claims in the past have been dismissed or ignored due to their underdog status. Their American Indian law lawyers understand the challenges tribes face when state and local government infringe on tribal sovereignty and the federal government neglects its trust responsibilities. Their passion for tribal sovereignty and self-determination is the driving force behind their practice, fueling their tribal advice and advocacy, especially when tribes are forced to litigate against powerful interests. Robbins Kaplan, LLP, representing American Indian tribes, tribal government boards and commissions, individual tribal members, and American Indian business and business concerns. For more information, visit robbinskaplan.com.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are a Lusa Nation.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I Am Awake. We are always, always so pleased to hear from Emma Needham up north. She's a Red Laker, and we always love to hear from a young person's point of view and her beautiful essays. Let's take a listen.
This is Ogama Ganui Kwe. You are their protector now. In the midst of all of this, in less than a week since I last recorded, I've gone from experiencing significantly more fear than any other emotion to anger. Absolute anger, the kind of anger that makes my palms hot and my voice waver. And don't get me wrong, I always have a low level of anger, a small kindling fire burning within my soul, but right now it is roaring. First and foremost, and it may be the only topic I have time to touch on, but the inadequacies and inequalities in our society are so vast. I'm baffled. Baffled doesn't even begin to describe it. It's almost too funny of a word, but I just can't wrap my head around why we can't understand that everyone's life matters. I'm angry for everybody's life and well-being who up until this point in time has not been a priority. Every single mother who is caring for the youth of our country, alone and jobless now. Adults in vulnerable positions. Children in vulnerable positions. Elders. Addicts. Those suffering from abuse. Those suffering from mental health. Those with limited capacity or who are immunocompromised. Those who are homeless and experiencing food insecurity, which is just the politically correct term for saying people who are on the verge of starving. These are not new problems. These have always been a problem. This is the state of living for so many people in this country, and only now, during the isolation and quarantine in a global pandemic, do people suddenly realize how many of their neighbors have been on the verge of starving for all this time? And the rest of us who can't realize how close those things are to all of us, to people we care about. They're rushing out and buying everything they can get their hands on to protect themselves, and only themselves. But what can you expect from a capitalism and consumerism culture? The solution to anything is to buy your way out. Those who are lucky enough to buy their way out, those are the people that have pulled themselves up by the bootstraps. Never mind that we've been paying grocery store workers and people who clean our surfaces and provide services to those who are in times of crisis at the federal minimum wage, $7.25 an hour. Acting like those positions are low-skilled and don't matter. Now all of a sudden, those people are emergency workers. Now all of a sudden, my local grocery store has an extra $2 an hour they can give to their employees to take care of them during this time. Now all of a sudden, employers can make it easy for people to work from home when they're disabled or immunocompromised or pregnant. Only now is it possible for these things to happen. And the truth was, these things were able to be happening all along. These food drives that feed our needy families and children, the community that is happening, that is surrounding this, is gorgeous. But I am so angry that this is what it's taken to get us to this point. that compassion and compromise is our last resort for survival and not our way of living. Our government has been slow and pathetic in responding to this, which, again, I can't say I'm surprised. And I'm certainly not going to rely on those services and government people to be the ones that care and get us all through this. Because the bottom line is the federal government does not care about any of our well-being. Now is the time that we get to welcome the rest of the country to what it feels like to be Indigenous. We have damaged elders, damaged children, regular illness, all from years of being ignored and not cared for, with a limited past to learn from. And a limited future to rely on. I'd like to say that that would be something to be proud of, but it's not. I'm angry because I don't understand why death is the only motivator for our government. If you're still living your life as normal, take a look around. No one is coming to save us. Look around at the neighbors and the people that you care about and understand that you are their protector now.
I would like to end with these thoughts. If you are listening to the show, you are the resistance. From Chief Plenicoos. The ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and I've been your host, Robert Pilot. The revolution is kicking into high gear, and I would like to thank all my listening audience, our sponsors, and especially our guests which make this show. If you are listening to this show, you are the resistance. We're still here. We are the seventh generation. Free Leonard Peltier.